You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Freddie and Harry podcast on ESPN Radio.
Can just say that he's a surgeon. He schedules his surgeries around Freddie and Harry.
Yeah, that's what he puts on in the background while he's working.
Excuse me, sir. I know that this heart surgery is important to you, but I can't install this pacemaker until Thursday between 10 and 12 because I can't miss Freddie and Harry between 3 and 7 p.m. Eastern.
That's what they do. The doctor, they ask you when you're in the operating room before you get the anesthesia and you pass out, they ask you what you would like to hear, and they put that on, and then when you pass out from the anesthesia, they then put on what they want.
They just put on whatever that they want. So he's just listening. So he's doing surgery while listening to Freddie and Harry. Well, that's the case. I appreciate you for listening. No Freddie and Harry today. Jonathan Zaslow and Amber Wilson filling in for the guys. Freddie and Harry presented to you by Progressive Insurance. You can find him at Zaslow Show. You can find me as well at Amber W Sports.
I mean, surgery seems really hard, you know, to us, but to the doctor, that's his job. It's regular day work.
Still a little bit hard. I mean, it depends.
I don't think they think it's that hard.
Talking about,
no, I don't think so. I don't think they think it's that hard.
I think they think it's pretty hard. They're doing, like, face transplants out here and now, Zaslow. I think it depends what type of surgery we're talking about. So?
Yeah, I don't think
it's
that hard for
them. It still has a degree of difficulty involved in the whole thing of cutting open a human body. Nevertheless, if there are any surgeons out there listening to us right now, we appreciate you. Please focus on what you're doing as well. We're focused on what we're doing, and what we're doing is talking about how Reggie Bush got his Heisman back from 2005. It was stripped away in 2010. Well, 14 years later, the Heisman Trophy Trust has given it back to Reggie because they've realized that stripping him of it looks stupid now. All these years later, he got stripped
looks
of it, of
so
course.
Stupid.
So stupid, because he was allegedly compensated a few thou for his time in college at USC and given a car or something. He helped out his mom, I think. They strip him of the Heisman. Well, now we are in 2024, where players are routinely through NIL getting millions. A guy like Reggie would have quite literally made millions of dollars in college. So now it looks stupid that we wouldn't let him earn a few thou. They've decided with the changing landscape in college football, they're going to right that wrong. But that begs the question, what other wrongs need to be righted in the world of sports? We threw out some nominations earlier in the show. If you missed anything here on Freddie and Harry, you can check out the podcast on the ESPN app. We talked about the Fab Five getting their Final Four appearance back. That's technically been stripped away from them, which is stupid because we all saw them play in a Final Four. Barry Bonds, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Full stop, period. That's non-arguable in my book. Zaslow doesn't fully understand the game.
No, mine was
he
good.
Wants to, no, you, not
I'm
really.
Good at
you
this.
Want to go back in time and change the Tuck rule because you think it's going to erase all of the dynasty there with the New England Patriots, six Super Bowls with Tom Brady. You think it's going to make it too hard for old Tom to win if we get rid of the Tuck rule.
So it would have never happened if not for that one play. Stupid
what are your wrongs that you want righted? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's where Derek is calling us from Georgia. Derek, thanks for the call. What do you got?
Well, I definitely think that the 2002 National Championship Trophy belongs in Coral Gables, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
True story.
True story.
The ball got there. The ball got there before Sharp did. And then after a commercial break, then they throw a flag.
Yep, that's right. He's talking about that. And they threw a flag like the next week. He's talking about that back judge, Terry Porter. Sometimes you got to speak their name, you know. Terry Porter threw that flag right there. It's like the team was already celebrating.
Zaslow remembers every second. For those who don't, Zaslow, what is he referring to? And by the way, he's referring to something that you and I on Miami radio had to listen to people complain about for the last decade.
University of Miami Hurricanes undefeated, looking for back-to-back national championships, 2001 season, and they Ohio State. It's the end of, I think it was the first overtime, you know, and incomplete pass in the back of the end zone, and about 6 months later, this back judge Terry Porter throws a flag for pass interference. Nonsense. And the Ohio State, they get a new set of downs there. They score. They end up winning in double overtime or whatever it was. And yeah, there you go.
And the rest is history. And the rest has led to Canes fans complaining for the last 23 years about that national championship that they feel like they were robbed of. I am a Gator. I am not a Cane. But I will say, after spending so many years on Miami sports radio, I even will admit that that was a bad call. They probably should have had an opportunity there to win that game. 888-SAY-ESPN. Zach is calling us from Syracuse. Zach, thanks for the call. What is the wrong that needs to be righted in sports?
Hey, guys. Armando Galarga in 2008. I was only 7 years old, so I don't really remember it. He threw a perfect game, but then he didn't because they got the call wrong at first base for the 27th out. Guy threw 88 pitches in the game, which is ridiculous. That should be converted back to a perfect game.
Yeah, we were talking about that one earlier in the show. That one has been nominated more than any other, Zaslow, which I've been a little surprised about. We've gotten tweets about that one. We got calls about that one earlier.
But that just goes to my point, Amber. So Armando Galarraga, he would have had a perfect game. Everybody knows it's a perfect game. And Jim Joyce, you know, he botched it at first base. He called the runner safe. He was very clearly out. Everybody knew he was very clearly out in real time. But it ended up being a play and a moment that we all know of, because you're going to have an extremely hard time listing me a handful of other pitchers who have pitched a perfect game. But we know that Armando Galarraga should have had a perfect game because of what ended up transpiring. Not that Jim Joyce blew the call, but because of what happened afterward, where post-game, Jim Joyce, he was in tears because he realized that he took that moment away. He didn't do his job properly, and he took that moment away from Armando Galarraga. And as a result...
But you think this moment is better somehow? You think this moment...
I think we know about it now. I think we're... Amber, there is no way, if Jim Joyce got that call right, I would never be able to tell you, 2010, who was that pitcher for the Detroit Tigers that got that perfect game? There is, because he really wasn't very relevant. He was not, like, he didn't go on and have some great career. I would never remember that Armando Galarraga pitched a perfect game. But now, me and all these other people who are calling in, they know who he is, and they know about that moment. And on the down low, Amber, we all know he pitched a perfect game. We do. We know it.
Like, Armando, you're more famous now because you got screwed. That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
It works out better for you.
Because we all know he pitched a perfect game. We all know this. It really doesn't take away from it. I'm sorry, it doesn't.
Say it. It's not in the record books. If I'm him, I still think I probably want to be able to tell my grandkids I actually pitched a perfect game
it.
And he got
I
robbed of that moment.
It's on the record.
Jared,
I just said it.
Jared is calling us from Denver. Jared, thanks for the call. What do you have for us?
Hey, I'm going to take you guys back to 2001 when little 10-year-old Jared was saving newspaper clippings from every week of the NFL season. I know you touched on it a little bit here, but when football was still magical and they called back that tuck rule when the Raiders really had their only chance at a Super Bowl. And as we all know, when they finally made it to a Super Bowl, they got rolled by the Bucks. And then, of course, Tom Brady does what he does.
Zaslow, you are on the same page right there as Jared.
I told you, we got to right the wrong. And righting the wrong, it isn't even so much righting the wrong that is the tuck rule. It's righting the wrong that is the New England Patriots Week 6 Super Bowls. That's the wrong that we're righting, yes.
But how are we doing that again? We're just doing that by eradicating the tuck rule. Had that
if they called it a fumble,
never happened.
Which
you think
everybody
all
knows.
Six are going away?
Yeah.
Not just the one against the Raiders, but all six are going
away?
Well,
that was the AFC Championship game. They never would have went on and won against the Rams. And,
the Rams,
you know,
yes.
And who knows what would have became of Tom Brady's career? Honestly, who knows what would have became of Tom Brady's career? Who knows?
I mean, I feel like we do know. Like, we do, in fact, know. He's the greatest quarterback that ever lived. I feel like it's pretty cut and dry. He still would have been pretty damn good had they made it to a Super Bowl.
The Patriots went 8-8 the very next year after winning the Super Bowl that season. Maybe they would have cut bait from Tom Brady. Maybe when, I was like, you know what?
So you have Tom Brady getting cut by the Patriots because the tuck rule never goes into effect. My favorite thing about old Tom now, though, is that he's out here in 2024 on podcasts all over the place complaining that there's no defense and that all the rules in the NFL favor offense too much. And it just cracks me up as the catalyst for it all. When you're the reason that, in fact, all the rules favor offense and you can't breathe on quarterbacks. 888-SAY-ESPN. Chris is calling us from North Carolina. Chris, thanks for your call. What wrong needs to be righted in sports?
Hey, Chris. Guys. So the date was January. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Now go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. The date was January 11, 2015. I was drinking a Bud Light and I wasted a perfectly good beer. Cowboys, Packers, that Dez Bryant catch, that was clearly a catch. I need my beer back. I need to right the wrong.
That one's been a popular nomination. We've gotten that one several times. I do like the commitment to knowing what you were drinking in 2011. Yeah. Is there any moment in your life, Zaslow, that you remember what, in fact, you were drinking?
No.
I'm not sure that's for me either.
This happened. It's a great moment. I was drinking a,
like
Black Label.
Like such and such brand of such and such liquor or beer. I don't know if I could tell you that specifically, what I actually had in my hand during that moment. But
because you were too hammered, so you don't remember?
Oh, duh. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. Visit progressive.com.
The NFL Draft on ESPN Radio.
It's time to get the show started.
You better lose yourself in the music the moment you own it. You better never let it go.
The NFL Draft is now officially open.
Live from the heart of downtown Detroit, it all starts with round one tomorrow at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN, and on ABC.
So round one headed our way right here on our airwaves, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. We will have all the answers, but until we have all the answers, we still have a whole lot of conjecture. We've got 24 hours left to guess, so let's go ahead and do it. The best case scenarios for the teams drafting in the first round. Shannon Penn, help us out.
All right, Zaz, the first team on the list, we're going to start with the Chicago Bears. Zaz, what's the best case scenario for the Bears, who have the first and the ninth pick in the first round?
The best case for the Bears is they land a stud wide receiver along with the quarterback who we know that they're taking number one overall. We know it's Caleb Williams. So best case scenario is, let's say they stay at number nine. You know, we're assuming Marvin Harrison Jr. will be off the board by then. But let's say the next best receiver winds up – it's a wide receiver heavy draft. But let's say the second or third best wide receiver winds up being available for them at number nine. Best case scenario is they now have a foundation on the offensive end. I know they just traded for Keenan Allen. But listen, he's not going to be there for that long. All right, he's up there in age. I know he had a great year last year. The Bears landing a stud wide receiver to go along with Caleb Williams. That's best case scenario.
So I think that's the easy play, and that's certainly one direction. Now, the Bears actually have acquired some weapons here in the offseason. We all know they're going Caleb Williams number one, so I'll keep that on the list of best-case scenario, obviously. Caleb Williams number one. The question is, what's the best-case scenario after the number one overall pick? And for me, that's protecting that quarterback. Because although the Bears have some weapons now, and whatever quarterback is going in there, he'll have some of those around him, it's still questionable when we're talking about the protection that's going to be in front of him. It's an okay O-line. You need more than okay if you're going to use first round, first pick draft stock on a quarterback. So I actually would take an O-lineman there if I'm the Bears. Shore up your O-line as much as you can. Protect Caleb Williams, because you're going to make a hell of an investment here over the next 5 years.
All right, Amber, next up, what's the best case scenario for the New England Patriots?
Ooh, this one gets fun. Now, I do think that the best case scenario is that the New England Patriots end up with a quarterback. But if I'm the Patriots, I am actually very seriously considering trading back. They have brought in several quarterbacks to take a look at. Are they actually interested in a Drake May or Jaden Daniels where they need to stay up there at three? Or would they be happy with a McCarthy or a Penix Jr., other guys that they have looked at quite closely according to the reports? So I actually think best case scenario for a team that has a whole lot of needs on it and a new staff in place is to trade back a little bit, still get a good quarterback, but also a really good wide receiver. So you start building weapons around that quarterback. The old era of expecting the quarterback to do it without any of the elite weapons, like we saw somehow Tom Brady do for so many years, that era is gone along with Bill Belichick. We're ushering in a new era here. I think the Patriots need to get weapons and quarterback as much as possible.
The best case scenario for the New England Patriots, Amber, is they are not tempted to trade out Ooh. Of the number three spot. They avoid that temptation. If there are other teams that want to jump up and take that quarterback, presumably Drake May, who's going to be available at number three, the Patriots should look in the mirror and say, if they're willing to come up and get this quarterback, are we making a mistake considering we need a quarterback and we're not going to take him? Best case scenario is they stay in that spot and they take the quarterback, because not only do you have a top pick and number three overall, but it's a quarterback-rich draft. There are plenty of other draft years where you could be number three overall and there's only one or two top-tier quarterbacks available, and number three isn't even good enough to land one of them. So best case scenario is the Patriots avoid temptation. We all succumb to temptation every now and then, Amber. The Patriots avoid temptation and they stay at number three.
All right, Zaz, I'm listening intently here for this next one. Best case scenario for Devin Cain and Shannon's New York Giants.
Okay. Best case scenario for the Giants is they manage to sucker New England into trading that number three pick. That's right. That's the best case scenario for the Giants. You don't want to sit back at number six and, you know, hope the fourth best quarterback drops to you. No, you want to sucker the Patriots and you want to get that number three pick, and then you get one of the top guys and then you're cooking with gas. That's the best case scenario for the Giants.
Zaslow and I are singing opposite tunes with these teams. I have the Giants' best case scenario is they get one of the top receivers, that Adunze is still there, they get Neighbors, and then they're still able to get a good quarterback. And maybe in order to do that, they just trade back a few spots and they're able to end up getting both in this draft. But if I'm the Giants, I'm actually going wide receiver first. Daniel Jones, huge cap hit on their books. This general manager gave him the extension. When Daniel Jones has been healthy, he hasn't been all that terrible by any means, and you're not going to play whoever you're drafting anyways off the bat. So do you feel like you could take the fourth or fifth best or sixth best quarterback and put yourself in a position still for him to learn under Daniel Jones and win ultimately? Maybe if you have the elite weapons, and so that's why I would go wide receiver first.
All right, Amber, best case scenario for the Minnesota Vikings in the first round.
So this is where I will finally go against my philosophy there with the Patriots and with the Giants. And with the Vikings, I feel a little bit differently about the situation they're in. Right now, they're in no man's land, and we know that it's not going to work where they're sitting, because they've got to trade up to get a quarterback if they want one of the top quarterbacks. And my thing is with the Vikings, unlike a lot of these other teams that we're discussing, is they're actually a team that feels like they're a quarterback away, Zaslow. So if I am the Vikings, it is worth it for me to actually trade up to go ahead and take their guy. Trade all the way. This is fun. Trade all the way up if you need to. Go ahead, get your guy. Trade with the Patriots. Trade with the Cardinals, whoever you need to get your guy. But in that situation, Zaz, I like it because they're a quarterback away.
The best case scenario for
Hold on, I have one more. Right before you go. And also retain Justin Jefferson. And go.
Okay. Best case scenario. I mean, I think that's a given. I'll second that.
Well, no, because there's all these rumors that they're going to trade him away. That they're going to trade him away with draft capital tomorrow in order to be able to trade up. So I just want to be clear. That was not part of my trade up for
losing Justin Jefferson is not best case scenario. Best case scenario for the Minnesota Vikings is J.J. McCarthy is there for them at number 11. This is not a bad team. This is not a bad Viking team. Their season got ruined when Kirk Cousins got hurt. They were on a run. Then Cousins got hurt. And obviously, you know, went kaplooey. This is not a bad team. You get a quarterback at number 11. And then you still have your pick late in the first round at 23. Who knows? Maybe you can move down a few spots in there and acquire an extra second round pick. But with two first round picks, if I'm the Vikings, I am interested in one of those quarterbacks that drops me at number 11. Best case scenario, J.J. McCarthy is there. They scoop him right up.
You're listening to Freddie and Harry, Jonathan Zaslow and Amber Wilson filling in for the guys. Back to Shannon Penn for a best case scenario for teams drafting in the first round.
Yep, we got a couple more here. Amber, best case scenario for the Denver Broncos.
The best case scenario for the Denver Broncos, who do not have a second round pick in this draft, is in fact that Zach Wilson ends up being awesome.
Wow. I mean, we're living in fantasy land.
And they still draft, say, let's say they take Bo Nix there at 12, okay? And then they get to trade him away because Zach Wilson ends up being so great for the Denver Broncos that they never have to use Bo Nix. Bada bing, bada boom, Zaz. And all of a sudden, you get a ton of draft capital in some future draft. That's the best case scenario for the Broncos.
The best case scenario for the Broncos. It's not going to be all at once, all right? And no, I'm not talking about, you know, Zach Wilson ended up being a guy for them. No. You're not going to be able to rebuild this thing all at once. If I'm the Broncos, the best case scenario is you got a foundational piece that could drop to you at number 12. If Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia, can drop them at number 12, he's supposed to be Hall of Fame caliber, a difference maker. For me, best case scenario is he falls to you at 12, and now you got yourself a big-time weapon to get rebuilding with.
But for Zach Wilson to throw the football to, well, I'm with you. Hall of Fame caliber, Brock Bowers, future Hall of Famer. So Zach becomes a future Hall of Famer. All the wrongs are righted there.
Now, Shannon and Devin, I don't know if you're picking this up. She's very impartial to anyone with the last name Wilson. All right.
That is
so
what
she is team Zach Wilson. Anyone Wilson is apparently at some point from her family tree.
Zach, Russell. I have a tendency to defend all Wilsons.
Owen Wilson,
so the Zach
Luke Wilson,
Wilson one. Owen Will. Yeah, they don't need defending so much. But the Zach Wilson one.
The volleyball in Castaway. Yeah.
All right, we got.
It's
look,
been a little difficult.
We got one more, and I got to hear from you guys. Zaz, okay. Best case scenario for the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, okay. The best case scenario for the Miami Dolphins, they get a replacement for Christian Wilkins. That's right. The Dolphins lost a lot of defensive pieces. I think it's a little overstated because I actually think overall the Dolphin defense has improved. I think they've replaced most of those guys with better players, but not a defensive tackle. Very tough to fill that void that Christian Wilkins has left, taking all that money with the Raiders. Okay, fine. So best case scenario is they actually replace that position in the first round. Just like they selected Christian Wilkins, they replace him with a first round pick.
Yeah, they hit on Wilkins. They just didn't want to pay Wilkins. I would go edge first.
I get it. It's not a premier position. I get it.
Right. I would go edge first if I'm the Miami Dolphins. They lost Wilkins. They lost Van Ginkle. They lost Jerome Baker. They lost Xavier Howard. It's why it looks so bad defensively. But I do attend to agree with Zaslow. Some of those pieces have been replaced, and also those pieces, particularly Baker and Howard, weren't as elite as certainly they once were by the time this departure was made. Also, though, for best case scenario for the Dolphins that you have to mention is they get a darn extension worked out with Tua Tagovailoa. I don't know what's taking so long here, but let's go ahead and get that extension in place. Yes. Coming up next here on Freddie and Harry, Zaslow and Amber filling in for the guys. Brian Scalabrine said that Spo issued a code red in game one of the Heat Celtics series. What is that crap? We'll get back to it. This is ESPN Radio.
The Freddie and Harry Podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
There is NBA action tonight. The Pelicans and the Thunder will go at it in game two at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. But first, the Heat and the Celtics. They will go at it as well in game two. Tip-off is at 7 p.m.
How y'all feeling? You trying to be all professional, Amber, bringing us in? Right. How y'all feeling with your Heat? You down 0-1 playing in Boston. How you guys feeling?
I got to be honest. I'm not emotional about this one because we ain't got Jimmy. We ain't got Terry. It doesn't count, Boston. I'm sorry. It doesn't count. Like, it's cute that you guys finally put together a decent roster and finally worked out the pieces you need around Tatum and that you need around Brown to actually get something out of those guys who've been underperforming as a duo for years. I keep hearing Jason Tatum's a top player in the league, a top three. It's like, all right, is he going to win something? Fine. You finally gave him some pieces here for him to try to win something. And you're very lucky that you're finding us in a year where we ain't got to Scary Terry right now, and we don't have playoff Jimmy. And
that sounds like an excuse.
Well, no, it's not an excuse. It's a reason. It's not an excuse. It's a reason.
They can't get past us if we had him.
And Amber's right. Amber's right. It ends up having the opposite effect because, if the Celtics can manage to get past the Heat this round, I'm not going to be devastated because it's not a fair fight when last year Derek White hits that shot, gets that tip in after game six, and I'm catatonic out in the back patio at the end of that game figuring we're going to be the first team ever to blow a 3-0 lead, and I don't know what to do with myself. I would not have been able to recover from that. This year, you wind up losing to the Celtic team. All right, it's like I'm going to be all right. It's not a fair fight.
Hey, did you just use fair?
Yeah.
It's fair, really? We're using fair in professional sports right now?
It's not fair. Without our best player and probably our third best player.
It's not fair? You know it's not fair being up 3-1 in the series and then having P.J. Brown throw Charlton.
Hey, listen. It's almost 30 years ago. You got to let that go.
He didn't throw him. I mean, I rewatched the video. It was a little grainy because it was from the 90s. But I rewatched the video, and he barely tossed him.
Charlie Ward, how about you don't undercut the guy who's 6'10", all right? How about you stay in your lane, you pick on the guys your size, because otherwise you get tossed into the third row.
You have him going to the third row. Shannon Penn has him getting tossed into, like, the 15th row, and the reality was he barely got tossed past
the way Shannon makes it sound, it was like there was a crime that took place.
That is what Shannon makes it sound like. The reality is that obviously we've all known this Boston Celtics team is a good team. They've been a good team, regular season team for a long time. The problem is for them, they tend to run into playoff Jimmy. They ain't got to worry about that this season. So shout out to Boston. They get one. They have an easy path here to an NBA Finals, and we'll see if they can still get it done. But what's ridiculous is some of the narrative coming out of Boston. Okay, Brian Scalabrine, the analyst
the big story
for
NBC
Sports Boston, was of course on NBC Sports Boston right after the game, and he had an interesting theory about what happened between Caleb Williams and Jason Tatum.
Caleb Martin, that'd be crazy if it was Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams would be really weird, and Caleb Williams, it makes a lot more sense that he's on my mind right now as we head into the draft tomorrow. That'd be crazy if Spo issued a code red with Caleb Williams, but in fact, it was Caleb Martin. Take a listen.
I'm not trying to start nothing here, but I'm just... Eric Spoelstra called a timeout with a minute 30 down by 16. 30 seconds later, that play happens. 30 seconds later, why is he calling a timeout at 1:30?
Down 16.
And then why is that play happening? That play right there, 30 seconds later. I don't know, man. That looks shady to me.
What you call that?
Co-red.
Okay, so I... The first thing I want to say is...
Gather yourself.
Yeah, I know. My head is going to start spinning, all right? The first thing that I want to say is I hate the idea that somehow it is not okay for teams to play hard until the end of the game. You know, in a league where the player hates to play and hates to play hard, we're going to be critical of the Heat calling a timeout, which, by the way, was a challenge of play, but to call a timeout with 90 seconds left in game one of a series. It's a long series.
A playoff series, mind you.
The playoff series.
You're supposed to just lie down and take it. So
if somehow we're now upset that guys are going to try hard for the entire 48 minutes, that bothers me. Now, the idea that Eric Spoelstra, who is so above any type of criticism about being a dirty coach or even suggesting anything unseemly, it is insulting to hurl that at Eric Spoelstra's way. I don't know, and I spent a lot of time around Eric Spoelstra. I was on the Heat broadcast for 13 years. I don't know that there's any coach in the league who may be more respectful of the game than Eric Spoelstra, all right? Now, what I will say is the Miami Heat, where they come from, Pat Riley, it is absolutely an organization where their MO is going to be to make you feel us, all right? Make them feel you. Do I believe that that is being said from Eric Spoelstra and the coaching staff to the team? 1,000 times? Yes, I do. But do I think that a timeout is being called with 90 seconds left in the game to remind the team to make them feel you? No, it's ludicrous.
And by the way, tell Caleb Martin, out of all players, to go ahead and issue the code red to try to injure Boston's best player, which is what Scalabrine is suggesting actually happened from, like you said, Spo, who's one of the most respected, if not the most respected coach in the entire league, and Caleb Martin, who is not at all a dirty player whatsoever and is not any semblance
of that.
Oh, by
the way, Drew Holiday
reputation.
Pushed him into Tatum. Don't forget about that.
And then there's that. Then there's that component. Even Tatum didn't think, when he realized what was happening, that was some sort of dirty play to try to take him out and tank their season. Also, I don't understand the philosophy. Is the philosophy that the Miami Heat are some desperate organization that needs a round one victory so bad that they're going to go out and undercut these players and try to take them out of games? Like, why on earth would that be the necessity here?
Well,
why would that need exist for an organization that, correct me if I'm wrong, has been in an NBA Finals and has multiple Eastern Conference championship titles here over the last 4 years? So why the hell would that organization need to stoop so low as to try to take out Jason Tatum out of the game? Like what really happens here if the Heat get bounced in the first? All of a sudden, the Jimmy Butler era was a disaster? No, nothing happens. It's still a great organization.
Well, I'll give you two reasons why that would be the line of thinking.
I don't like this from you. What are you doing?
Well, I'm not saying it's necessarily true, but I'll give you two reasons. Number one, these teams hate each other.
Be with me.
All right. No, these teams hate each other. So for anyone who is going to make that argument that the Heat are doing that, it's going to be because, yeah, these teams hate each other, and they're playing in the postseason for the fourth time in the last 5 years. So there is a lot of bad blood. I'm not saying that is what's happening, but that would be why someone takes that tact. Because they hate each other.
These organizations hate each other. These teams hate each other because obviously we're always matched up together in the postseason. But it's not as if, like, Caleb Martin, again, it'd be weird if Caleb Williams...
So weird. The day before the draft, or 2 days before the draft, if Caleb Williams is out there playing for the Heat, that'd be so weird.
If Caleb Martin had some sort of personal vendetta against Jason Tatum.
Well, I got news for you.
Amber,
it wouldn't be Jason Tatum that the Heat would go after. It would actually be Jaylen Brown they would go after. Because Jaylen Brown early in the season tried to break Duncan Robinson's arm. All right, so if they were going to go after anyone, it would not be Jason Tatum. It would be Jaylen Brown.
Which, by the way, was Scalabrine's entire explanation when he tried to walk it back on the Dan Le Batard show. He tried to go into this whole thing about what Jaylen Brown did earlier in the season. And I'm like, all right, but this wasn't even a Jaylen Brown thing. Why are we bringing this up? Here's Scalabrine on the Le Batard show.
Do you think that during that timeout, or during any timeout, by the way, do you think that Eric Spoelstra says, come on, guys, we're down by 32. We're just going to lay down and get punked? We're not going to send a message? Now, I'm not saying he said, go run over Tatum and hurt him. I'm saying, come on, guys. We're going to send a message to these guys. We're on a long series right here. This is what we're going to do. Now, if you think that that was not said throughout that game when they're getting punked by the Celtics, if you think that that was not said, then I think you guys don't like buy into your Heat culture of the biggest, strongest, nastiest, toughest team in the NBA.
I mean, Amber, maybe we're playing semantics, but I think there's a difference between in the middle of the game, or in this case, late in the game, and saying, hey, before we get out here, let's make sure that, you know, we go out there and we do something borderline dirty. I think there's a difference between that and, like I said, what is definitely being said to the team before the series starts is make them feel you. I mean, that, like, I don't think those two are the same thing. The Heat play very physical. Do they sometimes toe the line? Yeah, probably. And at the same time, the Heat know, especially without Jimmy Butler, the only way they could compete in this series, and it continues tonight with game number two, is they have to muck things up a little bit. Does that mean that things are going to get dirty or have to get dirty? No. But I do believe for sure that they are saying you need to make them feel you. And guess what? The good teams, the teams that succeed in the playoffs, have had that attitude for, I don't know, 1,000 years in that league.
There is a big difference between don't let yourselves get punked when you're down by double digits nearly an entire game and go out and take out the other team's best star, right? For his entire, like for the rest of his, like for the rest of the season. Like there's a huge difference between those two things. And what Scalabrine was originally suggesting is that Spo quite literally ordered the code red, meaning Spo went out and said, go right. hurt Jason Tatum.
And that part's insulting.
To walk it back.
That part's
And that part's ridiculous and insulting.
And I think Scal knows that at this point, a few days later. Like I think he
it's
knows
stupid.
That.
It's stupid. It's only embarrassing for one of these two teams that they were to lose this series. Like if Boston loses this series, it's hilarious.
Totally.
If Miami loses this series, nobody cares. Jimmy wasn't there. Playoff Jimmy wasn't there. They're not the better team. And they certainly weren't the better team.
Oh, come on.
And they were a play-in team.
I don't want to hear about who's there.
Shannon.
I don't want to hear about who's there or who's not. This is Heat culture. This is next man up. It's all about the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey. I fully expect the Miami Heat and their fans, who we know travel, to go up to Boston tonight and get a victory.
Shannon.
Get
Shannon.
Celtics.
Shannon, it's called Heat culture. It's not called Heat stupidity. All right.
Right. Coming up next here on Freddie and Harry, Zaslow and Amber filling in for the guys. We got to find out what is going on in other news in ESPN Radio.
The Freddie and Harry Podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Freddie and Harry, Amber Wilson, Jonathan Zaslow. We've been filling in for the guys. Freddie and Harry presented to you by Progressive Insurance. You can tweet to Jonathan Zaslow. Also find him on the gram. At Zaslow Show is where he's at on social. At Amber W Sports is where I am at. We've covered a lot of ground today, had a lot of fun, done a lot of NBA, a lot of NFL draft talk, of course. We head towards the draft tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Things get started in terms of the NFL draft coverage right here across your ESPN radio stations. If you missed anything on Freddie and Harry, check out the podcast on the ESPN app. But Zaz, we are a couple games into most of these NBA playoff series.
Yeah,
we have Celtics Heat tonight. We've got Thunder Pelicans tonight. We'll see what happens
just win
in those.
Tonight? Come on, just do it.
If the Heat want, can you imagine if the
just
Heat
win tonight?
Won in Boston? It'd be so crazy. It would be. You know, the whole country should be rooting for the Heat. You ridiculously
team.
Called. Yeah, you ridiculously called our Miami Heat America's team earlier, which could not be further
ridiculous.
From the truth. Because frankly, I think the entire country outside of Boston and Miami are probably somehow rooting for both of these teams to lose. But really, the country should be rooting for the Heat. Because it would be so funny if Boston lost to a Jimmy Butler-less Heat team in the first round. This Boston team. That's
what's likable about this Boston team? They're number one all season long. What's likable? Who needs to root for the best team? How's that fun?
I'm with you. It is not fun whatsoever, frankly. And so the more fun storyline would be somehow if they got it done.
Get on board with fun, America.
You have to like fun in order to want them to get it done. But out of these series that are already past game two, Jonathan Zaslow, has your mind changed at all about any of these teams?
Good question. So based on what we've seen so far, either through one game or through both games, I will tell you, I'm surprised that Philadelphia did not get one of the first two games. I do think the Knicks are going to win the series, but I feel like it's going to be a long series. And now the Sixers are in a spot where they need to win both their home games really to make this a long series. And I think that could be tough. I could see the Knicks getting one of those games. So I'm surprised that Philly did not grab. I mean, heck, they were up 5 with 27 seconds left. So, yeah, I guess I'm surprised that Philly did not get one of these games. That may be the one. I'm also surprised, if I can be honest with you, I thought the Nuggets were going to kill the Lakers in both the first two games. So maybe I'm surprised that the Lakers played so well in game number two that they actually had a chance to win that game. If I'm a Laker fan, it was obviously a devastating loss that game number two. But I think they should feel better going into game number three with the next two games at home than I would have thought that they were going to feel going into game number
really?
Three. I mean, yeah, well, I mean, it's obviously really difficult to recover from that game number two, but I think they played much better so far in this series so far than I expected them to. So I think the Laker fan may go into game three and four feeling like they have a shot.
I don't agree with you there about the Lakers at all. I mean, I understand what you're saying about game two, except for Anthony Davis. He was almost perfect in the first half. I mean, that dude was an absolute monster. They did not have an answer for him in the first half. And then they still end up losing that game. And Jokic still ends up putting up a triple-double and like some insane triple-double that makes him like, you know, one of four players in NBA history, yada, 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 to do it in the playoffs. Because that's what he does. And the reality is that Nuggets team is just better than that Lakers team.
So even when I don't you think Jokic doing something that's never happened before is supposed to be something that you yada, yada through.
It's yada, yada. Everything with this Jokic, we're yada, yadaing all of it. Like, that dude's just too good. He's too great. It's boring, Zaslow. He's a complete player. He's great in every category. What's interesting about
you like your players with flaws.
Yada, yada, yada. So, in my opinion, I still have the same expectation for the Lakers. It's just that they don't have enough. Even when LeBron and Anthony Davis play lights out, and I'm not surprised that those guys in a playoff series are going to play lights out with their backs against the wall. I do have the same opinion as you have about the Knicks, but I think it's slightly different where you thought that Philadelphia was going to get one. I'm surprised how good the Knicks have been, though, with Brunson not playing well.
Oh, he can't shoot. Yeah.
That has really shocked me. That I did not see coming, because you would have thought if Brunson can't shoot, the Knicks aren't going to have much of a shot here, even with the Joel Embiid health problems.
Well, and I'll tell you what's surprising. How about Joel Embiid grab a rebound in the fourth quarter of this series? Is that too much to ask for? Just one.
A rebound?
Yeah, just one rebound in the fourth quarter of this series. I don't think that's too
much. Yeah, but I mean, it largely he hasn't been the problem, although he is the best at laboring.
Allowed one of the greatest rebounds in Knicks history, you know, two nights ago. A little bit.
Well, that's true. There was that. Also, though, he did tell us how tired he was and show us over and over and over again. Coming up next, Amber and Ian. That show's not tired. I hear it's great.
Thanks for listening to the Freddie and Harry podcast on ESPN Radio. You can also listen to Freddie and Harry live weekdays from 3 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on Sirius XM Channel 80. You can also watch and listen on the ESPN app. The Freddie and Harry Podcast.